ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय So reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 4, Chapter 20. Let's see, is it text 29 today? Is that right? I think it's 29, right? Okay. Bhajanta tathvam ata eva sarhavo Vyudasta maya guna vibramodayam Bhavat padanu smaranadrite satam Nimitam manyad bhagavanna vidmate Bhajantyata tvam ata eva sadhavo Vyudasta maya guna vibramodayam Bhavat padanu smaranadrite satang Nimitam manyad bhagavanna vidmahe Bhajantyata tvam ata eva sadhavo Vyudasta maya guna vibramodayam Bhavat padanu smaranadrite satang Nimitam manyad bhagavanna vidmahe Others? Others chant? Ladies? Anyone? Bhajanti, they worship. Atta, therefore. Tvam, you. Atta eva, therefore. Sadhava, all saintly persons. Vyudasta, who dispel. Maya guna, the modes of material nature. Vibrama, misconceptions. Udayam, produced. Bhavat, your. Pada, lotus feet. Anusmaranat, constantly remembering. Rite, accept. Satam, of great saintly persons. Nimitam, reason. Anyat, other. Bhagavan, O Supreme Personality of Godhead, na, not. Vidmahe, I can understand. Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada. Great saintly persons who are always liberated, take to your devotional service, because only by devotional service can one be relieved from the illusions of material existence. O my Lord, there is no reason for the liberated souls to take shelter at your lotus feet, except that such souls are constantly thinking of your feet. Purport. The karmis are generally engaged in fruitive activities for material bodily comforts. The jnanis, however, are disgusted with searching after material comforts. They understand that they have nothing to do with this material world, being spirit souls. After self-realization, the jnanis who are actually mature in their knowledge must surrender unto the lotus feet of the Lord, as stated in the Bhagavad Gita, Bahunam Janmanam Ante. Self-realization is not complete unless one comes to the devotional platform. Therefore, it is stated in the Srimad Bhagavatam that those who are Atmarama, self-satisfied, are free from all contaminations of the material modes of nature. As long as one is affected by the modes of material nature, especially by Rajas and Tamas, he will be very greedy and lusty and will therefore engage in hard tasks, laboring all day and night. Such false egoism carries one from one species of life into another perpetually, and there is no rest in any species of life. The jnani understands this fact and therefore ceases to work and takes to karma sannyas. Yet this is not actually the platform of satisfaction. After self-realization, the material wisdom of the jnani leads him to the shelter of the lotus feet of the Lord. Then he is satisfied only in contemplating the lotus feet of the Lord constantly. Prithu Maharaj therefore concluded that liberated persons taking to the devotional path have acquired the ultimate goal of life. If liberation were the end in itself, there would be no question of a liberated person's taking to devotional service. In other words, the transcendental bliss derived from self-realization, known as Atmananda, is very insignificant in the presence of the bliss derived from the devotional service to the lotus feet of the Lord. Prithu Maharaj therefore concluded that he would simply hear of the glories of the Lord constantly and thus engage his mind upon the lotus feet of the Lord. That is the highest perfection of life. Om Jnanatim Randesha Gyanajana Salakaya Chakshurun Militamena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Panchakalpa Trubhischa Kripasindhubhyebhacha Patitano Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha. Haribo, so I'm very happy to be here in Mumbai, and thank you for this opportunity to speak on the Srimad Bhagavatam. It's very interesting, enlightening verse and purport by Srila Prabhupada explaining the relative happiness that's experienced by those who are fruitive workers, those who are jnanis, and those who are bhaktas, devotees of the Lord. To remind me of a case history or a story that I had read several years ago in clinical psychology. I was a professor of clinical psychology previously, so I tend to read those things. But it was an interesting story about a woman who experienced clinical depression throughout her whole life. And she was a young woman, but this particular psychologist tried everything. Every possible technique, everything in therapy that she could to try to relieve the depression, and nothing worked. Just nothing worked at all. So finally she had this realization, and she thought, perhaps we wouldn't be able to change this condition, so that maybe the client simply had to accept this was something she had to live with in life. And the client actually experienced a great relief. This great sense of relief that I don't have to necessarily change, I don't have to, you know, be different, maybe this is something I just have to accept in my life. So with that detachment and that acceptance, there was a certain relief of suffering. So I was thinking that's somewhat similar to what the jnanis experience or those who are Brahman realized. There is a certain relief, there's a certain detachment, there is a cessation of suffering, but you cannot say that it is real happiness. Just as this young woman who was very depressed, she had adapted to or accepted the fact of going through her life in this condition, but it's not that it created real happiness, or not that she was fully engaging, you know, in a very happy way in relationships like this. So in the same way, this is experienced by the jnanis, as described by Srila Prabhupada in this verse. It is not real happiness, it is simply the cessation of suffering. So in this purport, Srila Prabhupada describes this relative experience of happiness of the karmis, those fruitive workers, the jnanis, those who are perhaps even self-realized or Brahman-realized, and the bhaktas. So Prabhupada says in this purport that the karmis are engaged in fruitive activities for material bodily comforts. So we're all very, very familiar with that. We probably experienced that ourselves. The idea of working very hard with the hope there will be some enjoyment of the senses, some enjoyment of the mind, some enjoyment of the intelligence. There is this illusion, this hope is there that through this hard work there will be some happiness. I found an interesting quote the other day by Albert Schweitzer. He was a great physician. I think he won a Nobel Prize, and he was actually a vegetarian, I believe, too. When he said, happiness is nothing more than good health and a bad memory. So I thought that was kind of interesting. In other words, it's the illusion that we are experiencing a little bit of happiness right now, at least I'm not feeling too much pain, and I forget all the sufferings that I've had in the past. Of course, we not only forget the sufferings in this lifetime, but we forget the sufferings of many, many lifetimes through many species of life. So this is the nature of illusion, that we are experiencing distress and unhappiness in so many ways, but yet we think that somehow or another, if I'm not happy now, I will be happy in the future. And of course, being in this material world means accepting the material body, accepting the material mind, and accepting the suffering that comes with that. So we know that the threefold miseries of life are always with us, adiatmik, adidaivik, adibhautik. Our adiyatmika miseries, the miseries of the body and mind. We all experience these. Even if we're a young person, you know, we may still experience a certain amount of suffering or distress. What to speak of when those of us who are a little bit older, you know, one distress after another starts to come with the body. It's inevitable. It's interesting that in Kali Yuga, we not only have the bodily distress, but we have great mental distress. I think this is symptomatic of Kali Yuga. I saw in a research or study in America, the National Institute of Mental Health, which is, you know, government agency is responsible for, you know, all of this. Their survey showed that 26% of the population during any given year had at least one diagnosable mental disorder, like anxiety, depression, or more severe. So that means a quarter of the population is in such distress, they have such suffering that it's actually diagnosed as a mental disorder, you know, practically all the time. You know, now that's in America. Probably in India it's not like that. Everyone's happy here, right? No anxiety? No. And anxiety is everywhere. Everywhere within the material world, everyone is experiencing this type of distress. And as Kali Yuga progresses, the distresses continue. But it seems like it's even more symptomatic in the industrialized countries, particularly in the Western world. It's interesting. When I was young, I remember 30, 40 years ago, sociologists said that one of the problems, of course this was more in America, that we were going to have to face is what will we do with all the leisure time that technology is creating for us? Now, we do not experience a lot of leisure time. In fact, in America, people work more hours per week than any country of the world. You know, they're more in anxiety. They're all, you know, many of them have lost their jobs with economic downturn, and people are working two jobs, three jobs, doing whatever they can to simply survive, just like everywhere else in the world. You know, so somehow this problem of leisure time evaporated. That is not going to be with us. Rather, we see exactly what Srila Prabhupada is saying, that we're all struggling very hard. Everyone is struggling for existence, trying to enjoy some little bit in this material world and always suffering. So those adiadic miseries are always there. The adidaivic miseries, you only have to glance at a newspaper headline, or when you go through the airport, you know, hearing the news on the monitors, there's one earthquake or one typhoon, one tsunami, right? One drought, one flood after another, continually besetting the human population. Of course, Mother Bhumi is not very satisfied with the lack of sacrifice, with the lack of devotional service, you know, to the Supreme Lord. Therefore, we're seeing the reaction of natural disasters. And as far as adiabotic miseries, those caused by other living entities, you know, those are constant. It's incredible the way that mankind has found so many ways to destroy themselves and to hurt one another. I looked this up because I was curious about the fact that apparently in the 20th century, in that span of 100 years that we just covered, there's estimated over 200 million people have been killed in wars or war-related deaths. 200 million people needlessly killed. Why? What are wars all about? Usually it's the greed, right, or the avarice of different people, misunderstandings, the very nature of Kali Yuga, which is everyone is always quarrelsome and disturbed. These things are constantly going on. For no good reason, hundreds of millions of people are killed. So the miseries of material existence are always with us. So why do we keep doing it? Why do we keep struggling this material world? Maya is very expert at creating the illusory energy. And Maya offers us countless varieties of possibilities for enjoyment. The opportunities for the non-devotees seem almost endless. Even if I'm not enjoying now, the possibility is there. First of all, we have 8,400,000 different life forms to try. So we've experienced that. We've gone through so many lives, seen if there's some possible enjoyment there. Usually that comes up short. But without this variety created by the modes of material nature and the material elements, one would very soon tire of material life. Because the nature of the jiva is actually to experience great variety of happiness. That's our Satchidananda Vigraha. Our eternal nature is to enjoy. And Krishna enjoys unlimited variety, unlimited different types of experiences, of relationships, of happiness that are there. So that's our nature. So we are falsely looking for that in the material world. We're thinking, because that is our nature, because I am meant to enjoy, therefore I should be enjoying here in this material world. And again, we're frustrated over and over. So we try to amuse ourselves with so many different things. It's amazing the number of hobbies and collections and sports and activities that people create to somehow, that some new variety of enjoyment will give them some happiness. I have no idea why I was doing it. Maybe I was trying to sell something, but you know that I went on that eBay where they sell everything, this auction. And so there was a category called collectibles that had over 500 categories. Not 500 items, 500 different categories of things that people collect. You know, everything from, you know, some historic memorabilia to some anything at all. You know, just some, you know, amusement for the mind. You know, like my sister-in-law collects these little figurines of Santa Claus. She has hundreds of them all over her house, little figures of Santa Claus. You know, all different forms and varieties, all different rasas, relationships. You know, it's rather sad, of course, but these are perverted reflections of our natural spiritual instincts for variety, for relationship, for all of these things. But in the material world, they simply bewilder us and keep us hoping that maybe this thing will make me happy. Well, it's being described here by Srila Prabhupada in this purport, eventually the living entity does become tired. Eventually we wear out, and an intelligent person realizes the futility of material life. Therefore, the intelligent person or the jnani tries to become free from material bondage. And that's, of course, done by the process of knowledge, of differentiation of spirit and matter, understanding what is spirit, what is matter, understanding the temporary illusory quality of matter, understanding the eternal nature of spirit. So therefore, there is a little bit of happiness that one receives from coming to that platform of Brahman, of realizing that happiness is not to be found in the material world, but is on a spiritual platform. So a little bit of happiness is there, but that in itself is also limited. Of course, it's a very nice verse showing the superiority of devotional service over all these types of happiness. This is from Chandacharitamrita Adi Lila, and it's a quote, I think, from the Hari Bhakti Suhudaya. My dear Lord, O Master of the Universe, since I have directly seen you, my transcendental bliss has taken the shape of a great ocean. Being situated in that ocean, I now realize that all other so-called happiness to be like the water contained in the hoofprint of a calf. So Srila Prabhupada quoted that verse many times, say, like that, because that's really what it is. Compared to the happiness of real spiritual life and a relationship with Krishna, all other happiness, whether it be from material existence or from Brahman realization, are very, very tiny and insignificant. Right? So Prabhupada has mentioned those who are Atmarama, those who are self-satisfied. And also it is mentioned here that even those who are self-satisfied in spiritual life, understanding the difference between spirit and matter, being on that Brahman realization, that they, if they are intelligent, will further progress and accept the process of devotional service. Of course, there's a difference, there's a distinction between those who are the Brahmavadis, those who are Brahman realized, and Mayavadis. The Mayavadis, Prabhupada has told us, are envious of Krishna. They think that when Krishna appears in this world, he takes a form of matter. In other words, anything, any form or variety is material, is illusory. The Brahman realized jnanis are a little bit different. They're not envious of Krishna. They're not envious of spiritual life. But they, of course, think the impersonal realization is supreme. I may be wrong, and someone could correct me, but my understanding is that they think that when Krishna manifests himself, it's the spiritual energy manifests in form. Of course, they think formlessness is above form, but still they are understanding that, you know, this is the spiritual energy, where the Mayavadis, you know, directly, very offensively think that Krishna has assumed a form of matter in the material energy. But at any rate, this discussion of these Atmaramas reminds us, of course, of the very famous verse in the Srimad Bhagavatam, the Atmarama verse that Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu gave his 61 different interpretations, breaking down all the words within it in his preaching to Sanatana Goswami. So that's a nice verse. Atmaramas chamunaya nagrantha apyoru karme kurvanti haitikim bhaktim idam bhuta guru hari. All different varieties of Atmaramas, those who take pleasure in Atma, or spirit self, especially those established on the path of self-realization, though freed from all kinds of material bondage, desire to render unalloyed devotional service unto the personality of Godhead. This means that the Lord possesses transcendental qualities and therefore can attract everyone, including the liberated souls. So this is an explanation how even those who have no material desires, who are completely free from any attachment to the material world, are still attached to the lotus feet of Krishna. Still, the power of devotional service attracts their minds if they are sincere and intelligent, and they become devotees. Because that transcendental happiness of devotional service, a relationship with Krishna, is far superior to anything else. And, of course, we have great examples of those devotees who were on the Atmarama platform, well, those who were on the Atmarama platform, and that they became devotees because of contact with the spiritual either the spiritual forms, paraphernalia, or the words and the pastimes of the Supreme Lord. Of course, Shukadeva Goswami is mentioned in the Bhagavatam, that he was completely self-satisfied, self-realized. He was in the womb of his mother for 16 years, had no reason to come out in the material world until his father Vyasadeva recited the pastimes of the Srimad Bhagavatam. And therefore, he had reason to come and to preach in this material world. Another example given is the four Kumaras, who were impersonally realized, but when they traveled to Vaikuntha, and I think it's described just smelling the incense offered to the Lord, their minds changed towards devotional service, and of course they became great devotees. So we see these examples that if one is sincere in the pursuit of spiritual life, one progresses to the final point of self-realization, of understanding that one is not the body, of Brahman realization, even then those great souls will be attracted to Krishna and Krishna's pastimes, and that personal relationship with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So the Karmis and the Gyanis are trying to eliminate suffering by their different means, one through engaging the senses, one by detaching from the senses. But actually, the real relief from suffering comes through the process of devotional service. In the Bhaktivinoda Sindhu, the Nectar Devotion tells us that there are six results of bhakti. It's right in the beginning. And the first one listed is immediate relief of distress, that bhakti has the ability to destroy suffering, klesha. That's where klesha is given. The suffering that we experience is immediately relieved by the process of bhakti yoga. Of course, the other five that are listed are that bhakti awards all auspiciousness, one who is a devotee has a disregard for liberation, devotional service is very rarely attained, it gives transcendental pleasure, and only bhakti can attract Krishna. So those are the six qualities of devotional service, of pure bhakti, which are listed. Now it's interesting that Rupa Goswami explains that of these six qualities, that two are found in each of the stages of bhakti. Of course, the Bhaktivinoda Sindhu explains that there are really three stages of bhakti: sadhana, bhava, and prema. And that's basically what the discussion is about in the Nectar Devotion. So the first and second qualities, immediate relief of distress and awarding all auspiciousness, are found at the stage of sadhana. And then, of course, the first four qualities, including disregard for liberation and rarity of attainment, are at the stage of bhava. And all six are found at the stage of prema, which includes giving transcendental pleasure and attracting Krishna. So we know that Krishna is attracted by that pure love, that prema that's exhibited by the residents of Vrindavan. But what is interesting, that even at the sadhana stage, even at our stage of beginning devotional service, one will experience this quality of relief of all material suffering. So this is a very wonderful attribute. This is Krishna's great kindness and mercy on the living entities, that as soon as we seriously take to the path of Krishna consciousness under the order of the spiritual master, following the process of sadhana bhakti, one feels this great relief from all the material suffering. And most of us who came to Krishna consciousness, we experience that to some degree. You know, sometimes we lack faith, or we're not sure whether this process will really work, will really relieve all of our suffering. And in fact, devotees still do experience suffering occasionally. There is still, as long as we're in the material world, in these material bodies, there is some degree of suffering that we might experience. But this is a misunderstanding. This is a misunderstanding that this is a material suffering or material experience, because it is not. It's described by the Acharyas that one who is a devotee does not experience material suffering in the same way as the non-devotee. Jai Shri Shri Radha Rasvihari Jai Gauri Jai Shri Tram Ki Jai. So, for the devotee, any distress or any suffering that's experienced is understood to be directly given by the hands of Krishna. That somehow or another, because of my past misdeeds, I may have to suffer. Prabhupada gives the example, just like a fan is going, you pull the plug on the fan, it doesn't stop immediately, but it winds down for some time. So in the same way, we have some residual material distress that may be there due to our past activities, but just as the plug has been pulled, the process of accumulating karmic reaction has been stopped for the devotee. So when the devotee is situated under the spiritual energy, following the orders of the spiritual master, that process is no longer the same for them. And therefore, whatever we experience is not ordinary. Very well-known, very wonderful verse by Lord Brahma in the 14th chapter of the 10th canto, Tatte Nukampam Su Samikshamano. I won't read it all. Basically, my dear Lord, one who earnestly waits for you to bestow your causeless mercy upon him, all the while patiently suffering the reactions of his past misdeeds and offering you respectful obeisances with his heart, words, and body, is surely eligible for liberation, for it has become his rightful claim. So, very nice description that Lord Brahma, who of course is the first spiritual master in the Brahma Gaudiya Vaishnava Sampradaya, explains that the devotee may experience some suffering from the past, but he always expects the causeless mercy of the Lord and knows that it's only a matter of time when Krishna will bestow everything, including liberation. Yeah. So the devotee has great faith, his great hope that whatever we may be experiencing is temporary. Srila Prabhupada often said, just give us one lifetime. We've so many lifetimes, we've tried everything else in this material world. This one lifetime, give to Krishna. And then our success is guaranteed. There's a nice explanation of Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur in his commentary to that verse, 10.14.8 in the Bhagavatam, that he explains the difference between the distress experienced by devotees and the distress experienced by non-devotees. So Vishwanath Chakravarti says, a devotee understands that the happiness and distress he undergoes due to performing bhakti and committing aparadhas are special mercy from the Lord. It is like the father who sometimes makes his child drink milk and sometimes makes him drink bitter neem juice. Sometimes the father embraces and kisses his son and sometimes he beats him. The devotee accepts that whatever happens to him as the arrangement of the Lord is acting for his benefit. So this example of drinking bitter neem juice is, medicinal. If the child is sick, you may give them some medicine and it doesn't taste good to the child. But you might give some nice milk or some sweets or something else, and the child thinks this is very good. So does the parent love the child any less when he has to give him medicine for his own good so he'll become healthy than when he gives him sweets or milk or something more palatable? No. The parent equally loves the child. He is acting for the good of the child for what he needs. So Krishna works the same way. Krishna acts the same way as a loving parent with his devotees. Sometimes we may receive so many benedictions or so many auspicious or things that seem to be favorable. If that's favorable for our devotional service, then Krishna will award that. But it may be that that is not in our best interest. Krishna may take everything away. Going on, this purport says, the devotee thinks the Lord certainly knows what is best for me, even if I don't know. Karma and time have no effect on the devotee. So this is Krishna's personal arrangement for me. Out of his mercy, Krishna sometimes gives me happiness and sometimes gives me distress, considering how to engage me in his service. So for the devotee, they experience even distress as being Krishna's mercy. And this is something that's not just theoretical. Sometimes we say these things and say, oh yes, it's Krishna's mercy, You know, and of course, a great, great devotee like Queen Kunti said, let these distresses, these calamities come over and over again because it gives me the opportunity to remember you. So she's praying for distress. We may not be at that level where we're actually praying for distress, at least I'm not. I'm usually praying for relief of distress, you know, to Krishna. But when distress comes or suffering comes, we can understand that this is somehow or another the will of the Lord. This is somehow coming for our benefit. And usually in retrospect, years later, we'll see that there was some valuable lesson there. There was some reason why that happened. You know, I've had many examples. You probably have all had examples of this in your life. You know, I had one example about 3 years ago when I had a form of cancer. And, of course, it was cured, and I have no problem with it anymore. But I realized that while that might be seen as something that causes distress, in actuality, it made me feel very serious about spiritual life. It made me realize that I actually, old age, disease, and death will come even to me. You know, we say these things, we know this is the philosophy, but we often don't deeply realize, we think it means somebody else. You know, not me. No, it means me. And so Krishna sometimes gives us these opportunities to have greater realization and to realize how our life is very short. You know, it can be, I was just hearing a tape the other day where Prabhupada was telling Maharaj Parikit had 7 days to live. That was a benediction. He says, we don't know whether we have 7 days or 7 minutes to live. And it doesn't matter how old we are. As we know, these things can happen even to young devotees, these catastrophes. So sometimes Krishna gives us the opportunity to have greater realization, to become more serious about our spiritual life, you know, or to learn some lesson. So even though it's sometimes difficult and painful, we need to somehow or another within our hearts embrace whatever happens, whatever is distress, whatever suffering, or whatever happiness comes, all being equally the will of the Lord. And with that conviction and faith, as Lord Brahma had that faith, that everything will be for the benefit of the devotee. Right? So we need to proceed in Krishna consciousness with great hope, with great enthusiasm, and be assured that Krishna is always the protector of the devotee, always acting in our best interest. And if we simply are engaging in devotional service under the orders of our spiritual master, following the process of sadhana bhakti, then our success will be guaranteed. Right. So I'll end at that point. Are there any questions or comments? Anyone? Yes, Prabhu?
Hare Krishna. Thank you very much, Prabhuji. Very nice class. Prabhuji, you made one point in that devotees, while he is in distress or is in happiness, Krishna give him opportunity to serve better. So what kind of, when devotee is in distress, he can serve well in Krishna?
So how can a devotee in distress serve Krishna?
That's
the question. Well, we can always serve Krishna. There's no hindrance or limitation on that. And sometimes you understand, even as we age and there may be some sickness like that, sometimes the nature of the service might change. You know, we may not be able to do as much active physical service, perhaps, as we once did, but then it can become more internal. You know, if nothing else, the devotee can always chant, the devotee can always pray, you can always have that internal relationship of remembering and understanding Krishna. So that can be there in any situation, you know, regardless of any distress or health conditions or whatever. Yes. Anyone like to add anything to that? Yes, Prabhu?
Hare Krishna.
Well.
I understand that a spiritual master has to suffer the reactions of sinful activities, if any, committed by his disciples. Is that correct?
That's the understanding that Srila Prabhupada told us, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Of course, because of the purity of the spiritual master, you know, Krishna is also helping, you know, and also helping to absorb some of that. But even Srila Prabhupada mentioned that on a number of occasions, that he had to experience different distress because of the sinful reactions of his disciples. Once he said that he had experienced some bad dreams because of sinful activities or not following the principles of his devotees. And so, yes, that's a fact.
Prabhu, don't you think that a spiritual master does not act on his own? He acts only for and on behalf of Krishna.
Yes.
And a spiritual master who is a pure devotee, he is dearmost to Krishna. Mm. Do you think Krishna will allow his pure devotee to suffer the reactions, or he will take over the reaction?
Well, obviously Krishna absorbs many of the reactions that's there because, as you said, of his love for his devotee. But still, Srila Prabhupada did mention that. He did say that the spiritual master would sometimes have to experience some distress. Now, how that's been handled, you know, that's a very intimate relationship between a pure devotee and Krishna. You know, and to what degree that they're suffering, why the suffering, the understanding that the pure devotee has of that is probably something beyond my knowledge or understanding. Yeah. It's obviously a very deep, intimate relationship there.
So can we say that the fact that a spiritual master has to suffer the reactions of sinful activity of disciple is also due to past karma of a spiritual master?
No, we shouldn't think that. It's not from past karma. In fact, in another purport, Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakura makes it very clear the devotee doesn't actually suffer reaction from past karma. Most of the reactions, especially the pure devotee, is no longer suffering. There's a series of stages. There's four types of sinful reactions, and there's, you know, those that are experienced presently, those are in the future, you know, those that are, you know, mature and immature, Srila Prabhupada says in Nectar Devotion, and all those are gradually, step by step, eliminated in the process of sadhana bhakti. So one who is at the stage of pure devotional service is no longer experiencing reactions from the past. You know, so generally, the reactions that we might experience are mentioned are from aparad, that we could still, as devotees, if we commit offenses to other devotees, we may experience some reaction from aparad. For the pure devotee, the spiritual master, though, we shouldn't consider that it's a reaction, that it's obviously part of the intimate relationship of devotional service. You know.
Thank you. Hare Krishna.
Okay. Anyone else? Okay. Anybody else have anything to add or any other question? Okay. All right. Oh, and there's a question to the ladies. Okay.
Hare Krishna Prabhuji. Sometimes you are put in the problems to learn a lesson from it. We learn the lesson, but the problem still persists.
Yeah.
So what do we see from that, and how do we come out of it?
There must be a further lesson to learn then. You know, we've obviously, you know, have understood or appreciated a certain level, but, you know, maybe Krishna has more for us to learn. We don't always know at the time. We don't always understand exactly why things happen, you know, but that's where our faith is very important. That's where it's important to have faith that, you know, ultimately Krishna is working for our good, working in the best way possible. And we should never lose that faith. I've seen that happen with devotees. I've seen devotees who have experienced distress, great distress in their life, and they have an attitude of, why does that happen to me? It's not fair somehow, right? You know, it's like, it's not fair that I'm experiencing this. I'm Krishna's devotee. Why should this happen? It's hard for us to answer those things. You know, we can't know the will of Krishna, the will of the Lord at all times. You know, but we have that faith that, and as Lord Brahma prayed, the prayer of the devotee is, somehow or another, because of my sinful reactions, I'm experiencing these things. Somehow or another, I'm experiencing this suffering, this reaction, and I just continue on my devotional service. And Krishna sees that. Krishna appreciates that devotion. And things will ultimately be right for the devotee. Because, I mean, after all, the experience that we have is always on the material plane, isn't it? Isn't it always the body and the mind, often the mind that's experiencing anxiety? It's not the soul that's experiencing the pain and the anxiety or the distress. So the other thing is that even the stress that a devotee feels is not on the same level as a non-devotee. Like just we saw Srila Prabhupada experience tremendous physical distress at the end of his life. He said an ordinary person, the pain would have killed them, just the pain that he was experiencing. You know, but it's not experienced on quite the same level because there is that detachment. There is that understanding, because I am pure spirit, I'm a devotee of Krishna, this is happening to my body, to my mind, it's not happening to me. So that's another level, I think, another way that a devotee is able to deal with the stress or suffering that comes, is gaining that sort of that spiritual detachment. Yeah. I know that helps. It's a difficult topic. It's complicated. Yeah. Anyone else? Okay. Jai. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Hare Krishna.